You know that feeling, right? When you're faced with learning something totally new.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe it's finally getting to grips with that software update or picking up a language or even just, understanding some complex topic for work. And it just feels, well, daunting, like you're staring up at this huge wall.
That sense of overwhelm, yeah, it's incredibly relatable. And you've really hit on a key point there.
The time.
Exactly, the sheer time commitment involved. We often think about that first, and it feels like a major obstacle right from the start.
Well, that's precisely what we're digging into today. You, our listener, shared a fantastic set of resources, really exploring the science of how we learn and pick up skills.
Yeah, we looked at TEDx talks from Layla Landowski and Barbara Oakley, plus a really deep dive from the Huberman Lab podcast on skill learning specifically.
It's like bringing together these different expert viewpoints, doesn't it, to really understand how our brains actually, take in new stuff and make sense of it.
And our goal today is to really boil all that down, extract the most valuable, the most usable strategies.
Right.
We want to give you science-backed techniques you can start applying, like right away, to learn more efficiently, more effectively.
Without feeling totally drowned in information.
Exactly. Less overwhelm, more effective learning.
Okay, so the big question for this deep dive is, what are those key science-backed strategies you can use immediately to learn faster and actually remember it longer, no matter what you're trying to learn? Okay, let's unpack this. When we talk about the science of learning, I mean, where do we even begin?
Well, a logical starting point is probably the basic biology, how our brains actually learn.
Okay.
Layla Landowski in her TEDx talk, she touches on how our brains get initially wired up, during development. She mentions those growth cones on neurons forging connections.
Ah, yes, I remember that. Amazing stuff.
It is. But that initial wiring, while essential, is different from the ongoing process of learning new things when we're adults.
Right, that early development is one thing, but what about that common idea? That feeling that our ability to learn just tanks as we get older.
Yeah, Landowski does mention that. She says it starts getting harder after age 5 and then, like, exponentially harder after our mid-20s.
Which sounds not great for us lifelong learners. A bit discouraging.
It can sound that way, yeah. But here's the really interesting part, the good news, if you like.
All right.
While, yes, the brain might have more plasticity when we're younger, all our sources highlight actionable strategies, things we can actually do to dramatically improve learning at any age.
Ah, okay. So it's not a lost cause.
Not at all. Landowski suggests we have scientifically supported ways to counteract this perceived decline. Think of it like,
Right.
well, a young tree grows fast, but a mature tree can still grow new branches, strengthen existing ones.
Okay, I like that analogy much better because I definitely don't feel like my learning days are over. So, what's one of these crucial strategies then? Landowski really emphasizes attention, doesn't she?
She absolutely does. The power of focused attention. It's
Yeah.
critical, absolutely critical for retention.
Right.
Landowski stresses that when we're truly focused, we're just far more likely to remember stuff, especially long term.
Makes sense.
And what's fascinating is her point that historically, we haven't really had to work so hard to stay focused until, well, pretty recently.
Tell me about it. I feel like my ability to concentrate has just been shredded, Constant notifications, endless streams of information.
Exactly. Landowski talks about the impact of constant context switching,
Huh.
like from social media with all those unrelated snippets of news, ads, cat videos.
Yeah.
It leads to measurable attention deficits.
Yeah.
Our brains are just being pulled in too many directions at once.
It feels like it.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Our brains are really wired to focus on one thing at a time for optimal processing. The modern world just makes that a real challenge. Both Landowski and Huberman really underscore how damaging these constant interruptions are. So the question is, what can we actually do about it?
Okay, practical steps. Landowski offered some solutions, right? Both short-term fixes and longer-term approaches. What really stood out to me was exercise and focused attention meditation.
Those are excellent strategies. For a short-term boost, Landowski points out that just like 20 minutes of moderate exercise can sharpen your focus for up to 2 hours afterwards.
2 hours from 20 minutes.
Yeah. And it's not just about general health. Exercise actually increases the size of brain regions involved in learning and memory, helps create new brain cells, boosts overall cognition.
Wow.
Think of it as a quick tune-up for your brain right before you need to learn something. Key takeaway: a 20-minute workout can give you a 2-hour attention boost for learning.
So even just a brisk walk before sitting down to study could make a real difference. That's actually quite doable.
It really could.
And what about the longer-term strategies for improving attention?
Well, for long-term gains, Landowski recommends focused attention meditation. It's basically practice for your brain, training it to resist distractions better and sustain focus for longer, building that mental muscle for attention.
Right, like reps for your brain's focus ability.
Okay.
Now, Landowski also talked about alertness being crucial. You can't really learn if you're nodding off, obviously.
Exactly. Alertness is fundamental. Landowski explains it involves activating the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight response, which releases adrenaline and no adrenaline. That makes us more alert.
Okay, but how do we get that boost without, you know, feeling like we're constantly running from a tiger? She mentioned exercise again, didn't she?
She did. Exercise, certain breathing techniques like the Wim Hof method, even just a blast of cold water at the end of your shower.
Oh, yeah, that'll wake you up.
Definitely jolts you awake. These physiological methods work well for a temporary alertness increase. She also touches on stress.
Right, stress. How does that play in?
Well, small, brief stressors can actually enhance learning, probably due to that adrenaline release. But, and this is really crucial, chronic long-term stress, that's bad news. It physically changes the brain and impairs both learning and memory. It's a fine balance.
Okay, so a little jolt is good, but constant stress is damaging.
Got it. What about things like caffeine? Landowski mentioned that too.
Yeah, the evidence suggests caffeine before learning can enhance it for many people. It works on neurotransmitters.
Okay.
But she also points out that eating a big meal can decrease alertness as your body diverts energy to digestion. So timing seems pretty important. Key takeaway. Caffeine before learning can help, but avoid learning immediately after a heavy meal.
Definitely noted. Don't study right after Thanksgiving dinner. She also mentioned these ultradian rhythms, peak alertness windows.
Yes, these shorter periods, maybe 8 to 70 minutes long, of heightened focus that happen roughly every 90 minutes.
Right.
It's a good reminder that our ability to focus intensely isn't just constant all day. It ebbs and flows. So being aware of those natural peaks could help you schedule your really tough learning tasks.
Exactly. Hit them when your brain is naturally more receptive. But, you know, maybe one of the most vital pieces for alertness and for learning overall is sleep.
Yes. Landowski really hammered this home. Sleep is absolutely crucial for memory consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
Taking those short-term memories, the stuff kind of held temporarily in the hippocampus, like on a scratch pad.
Yeah.
And converting them into long-term memories stored more permanently elsewhere in the brain, in the cortex.
Spot on. And this really shows why pulling an all-nighter to cram is just... Well, it's counterproductive in the long run.
Because you're skipping the consolidation step.
Precisely. Without enough sleep after you learn something, those new memories are much less likely to stick around long term. Landowski advises prioritizing good sleep before studying so you're alert.
Okay.
And critically, after learning, to give your brain the downtime it needs to actually consolidate that information. Key takeaway. Prioritize sleep before for alertness and after learning for memory consolidation.
That makes so much sense. It's not just about being awake while learning. Okay, so we've covered attention, alertness, sleep. What's next? Landowski also talked a lot about repetition.
Repetition is fundamental, yeah. Practice makes perfect, as they say. But it's not just about mindlessly repeating things.
Right.
Landowski introduces the idea of spaced repetition, learning sessions spread out over multiple days. That works much better than cramming it all into one long session. Key takeaway, space out your learning sessions for better long-term retention.
So shorter sessions spread out with breaks.
Mm.
That actually builds stronger memories than one big marathon study session.
That's the core idea. Spacing lets your brain actively retrieve and reinforce those memories over time. Landowski points out, for instance, that two shorter sessions on different days lead to way better retention than the same total time spent learning in one go.
Interesting.
She also briefly mentioned one trial learning. You know, when something really emotional happens, you can form a super strong memory almost instantly.
Yeah, like remembering exactly where you were during a major event. But for everyday learning, spaced repetition sounds like the way to go. Landowski also stressed taking breaks during learning. I often feel like I should just power through.
Ah, but breaks are actually super important neurologically speaking for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
First, they give your brain a chance to subconsciously replay and process what you've just learned. Landowski gives this amazing example of a piano sequence being replayed like 20 times faster in the brain during a short break.
Wow. So my brain is doing homework even when I'm taking 5?
Kind of. She suggests quiet breaks, maybe a short nap, or even non-sleep deep rest to help this internal processing along.
Okay, that's one reason. What's the other key reason for breaks?
Well, the information you've just learned isn't very stable right away. It needs time to set. Landowski explains this concept of retrograde interference.
Retrograde interference.
Yeah, basically learning new stuff, especially similar stuff, too soon after something else can actually disrupt or even overwrite the memory you just formed.
Like trying to write on wet ink.
Exactly. She notes the stabilization process is faster in kids, but in adults, new memories can stay vulnerable to interference for up to an hour, sometimes longer. Key takeaway. Take short breaks after learning to allow new information to stabilize.
So taking maybe a 10 or 20 minute break after a focused session, doing something totally different and low key, and then waiting at least an hour before tackling something really similar, or even better, waiting till the next day. That helps lock it in.
That's the idea. It gives those new neural connections a chance to strengthen without getting immediately muddled by related info.
Lucky.
Which leads us to another crucial topic Landowski brings up. Mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Mistakes. Nobody likes making them. They feel discouraging.
They do. But Landowski reframes them in a really insightful way. That feeling of anxiety or frustration when you mess up, it actually has a biological purpose.
Really?
Yeah. It's your brain signaling, hey, something needs adjusting here. Learning is happening. She encourages us to sort of lean into that discomfort and keep going because errors are powerful drivers of learning.
So that wrong again feeling is actually a good sign. My brain is actively trying to figure it out.
Precisely. And Andrew Huberman, in his podcast, strongly echoes this. He explains errors directly cue the nervous system for correction. They basically open the door for neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to change.
Wow.
So instead of trying to avoid mistakes at all costs, we should see them as valuable feedback, a necessary part of the journey.
That's a really helpful perspective shift. Okay, now the Huberman Lab episode also got into different types of skills, right? And how we learn them.
Yes, he distinguishes between open loop and closed loop skills.
Okay, what's the difference?
Open loop skills are things where you perform an action and you only get feedback after it's done, like throwing a dart or serving a tennis ball. Closed loop skills involve continuous feedback during the action, letting you make real-time adjustments like running, maintaining balance, maybe driving a car. Key takeaway. Different types of skills rely on different feedback loops.
That makes sense. So how does knowing that difference help us learn them better?
Well, it affects where you should focus your attention during practice. For both types, learning involves sensory perception, what you see, hear, feel, plus movement and proprioception, your body's sense of its position.
Proprioception, right.
Huberman stresses consciously deciding what to focus on. For open loop, maybe it's the initial setup or the final target. For closed loop, maybe it's the subtle feelings of movement and balance as you go.
He also mentioned some brain stuff. Central pattern generators, upper motor neurons. Could you break those down simply?
Sure. Central pattern generators, or CPGs, are mostly in the spinal cord. They handle rhythmic, repetitive movements like walking or swimming once they're automatic.
Ah, the autopilot.
Kind of, yeah. But when you're first learning a new, deliberate skill, your upper motor neurons in the brain's cortex are heavily involved in planning and executing the action. Visualization, which we'll get to, mainly activates these upper motor neurons.
Okay, so when I'm first learning, say, a new dance step and feel super clumsy, that's my upper motor neurons working overtime. Then, as I get better, the CPGs might start taking over more, making it feel smoother.
That's a good way to think about it. It becomes more automatic. Now, speaking of practice, that famous 10,000 hour rule comes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. The magic number.
Well, Josh Kaufman's TEDx talk really challenges that, and Huberman touches on it too.
Now so?
Kaufman basically debunks the myth that it takes 10,000 hours just to learn something new. He explains that number came from research by K. Anders Ericsson looking at elite performers, top musicians, athletes.
Ah, people aiming for the absolute peak of their field.
Exactly. It was about what it takes to reach the very, very top. Not just about becoming reasonably competent at something new.
All right. Most of us aren't aiming to be the next Serena Williams. We just want to get, you know, reasonably good at tennis for fun.
Precisely. So what's a more realistic goal for initial learning? Kaufman and Huberman talk about the learning curve.
The learning curve? Mm-hmm. Steep at first, then levels off.
Generally, yeah. You usually see rapid improvement right at the beginning. Then it starts to plateau a bit as you get more competent. The key for personal learning is maximizing that initial rapid phase.
Okay.
Kaufman argues that about 20 hours of focused, deliberate practice can get you surprisingly far in almost any new skill. Key takeaway. Aim for the first 20 hours of focused practice for rapid initial skill acquisition.
20 hours? That sounds way less scary than 10,000.
Much more manageable, right?
Right.
But the key is how you use those 20 hours. It's about intelligent practice, as both Kaufman and Huberman describe it.
Intelligent practice. Okay, what does that involve?
Several key things. First is deconstruction.
Breaking it down.
Exactly. Break the skill into smaller, manageable chunks. And crucially, focus on the most important sub-skills first. Kaufman's ukulele example is perfect. Learn the few chords that let you play tons of songs first. Key takeaway, break down complex skills into smaller, focusable parts.
That makes total sense. Don't try to swallow the whole elephant at once. Find the key building blocks. What's next?
Next is eliminating barriers. Basically, remove obstacles and distractions that stop you from practicing.
Like hiding your phone.
That could be part of it. For Kaufman, it was just making sure his ukulele was always out and ready to go. Make it as easy as possible to just start practicing. Key takeaway, minimize distractions and make practice easy to initiate.
Reduce the friction. Got it. What else?
Deliberate practice. This isn't just mindless repetition. It's focusing your attention intently on specific things you want to improve.
Yeah.
Huberman really emphasizes this. Focused repetition, especially where you're actively spotting and correcting errors, is what drives that neuroplasticity, that brain change. You have to be engaged. Key takeaway, practice with focused attention and actively seek to identify and correct errors.
Makes sense. Not just going through the motions.
Yeah.
And the last part of intelligent practice.
Feedback. Actively seek it out and use it to fix mistakes. This ties right back to Huberman's open versus closed loop skills. Mm. And he mentioned that Super Mario effect study, where feedback like, oops, that didn't work, try again, led to more attempts and better success than feedback that punished errors.
Yeah, that was interesting. Frame errors positively.
Exactly. See them as learning opportunities. His tube test analogy also showed that just getting more repetitions in, even with mistakes, leads to better results than fewer super cautious tries. Key takeaway. Actively seek and use feedback to correct errors. View mistakes as learning opportunities.
So errors aren't failure, they're just data points guiding us. We should aim for lots of practice attempts, learn from the mistakes, and keep going.
That's the core message. Maximize repetitions within your practice time. And then Huberman adds the slightly surprising tip about what to do immediately after practicing.
Oh yeah, the idle time thing.
Yeah.
Sitting quietly with eyes closed for a few minutes.
Exactly. Anywhere from 1 to 10 minutes.
Why? I usually just jump straight to the next thing.
Well, it seems during that quiet rest, the brain actually replays the motor sequences you just practiced, but like in reverse. And this helps consolidate the learning.
Whoa, backwards replay.
Apparently so. It's something often overlooked. People might visualize before practice, but this brief quiet period after seems really important for locking it in. Key takeaway. Incorporate a short period of quiet rest with eyes closed immediately after practicing a new skill.
That's fascinating, Devin. Counterintuitive, but easy enough to try. Mm-hmm. So what about when I come back for my next practice session?
Well, you should hopefully see some improvement, build on those gains. And once you've got some basic proficiency, maybe you're succeeding, say, 25-30% of the time. Huberman suggests deliberately focusing your attention on one specific aspect of the movement or skill.
Okay.
Interestingly, what you focus on might be less critical than the act of consistently focusing on one specific thing during that session. He mentioned a piano key experiment by Claudia Lapp supporting this.
So once I'm not a total beginner anymore, pick one detail like my grip or my follow through or whatever, and really zero in on just that for the whole practice session.
That seems to be the idea. Really concentrate on refining that one piece, even if other parts aren't perfect yet.
Okay.
Huberman also mentioned using an auditory metronome sometimes to help generate more reps, maybe slightly faster. Focusing on that external beat can harness attention and potentially speed up plasticity.
Metronome. Interesting.
But he did caution against practicing super slowly right at the very beginning.
Oh, I thought starting slow was always best.
Apparently, moving too slowly can reduce that crucial proprioceptive feedback, the feeling of the movement, and also reduce the error signals that drive learning. Slow practice can be useful, but maybe more so after you've got the basic hang of it.
Another counterintuitive tip.
Mm.
Okay. Now, Huberman also talked about the cerebellum, the mini brain. How does that fit in?
The cerebellum is huge for movement, timing, coordination. It integrates all sorts of sensory info, visual, proprioceptive motor commands.
Okay.
And here's a really surprising link he mentioned. The connection between your range of visual motion and your physical range of motion.
Wait, how far I can move my eyes affects how flexible I am. Seriously.
It's sounds wild, I know. But simple, deliberate eye movements, like looking slowly as far left then as far right as you can, it can actually give you a temporary boost in flexibility. Maybe 5-15 degrees, he suggested.
Just by moving my eyes.
It's tied to how the visual system and cerebellum interact to control muscles and coordination. He suggested trying it as a warm-up before stretching.
I am definitely trying that later. That's amazing if it works. Okay, what about mental visualization? Can I just sit and imagine being brilliant at something?
Well, mental rehearsal can lead to improvements, both in strength and skill. Huberman cited a study by Rain Gannison showing this.
Uh-huh. So I can skip the practice.
Not so fast. The crucial point is, it's not a replacement for actual physical practice. The gains from mental training in that study were significant, but way less than the gains from actual physical training.
Okay. So it helps, but it's not a magic bullet.
Right. Visualization mainly engages those upper motor neurons we talked about. It's useful, especially as a supplement. Maybe 15 minutes a day, 5 days a week, particularly if you can't physically practice for some reason, injured maybe, or traveling.
So use it when I can't do the real thing, but don't rely on it entirely.
Exactly. And remember, the brain does know the difference, mainly because visualization lacks that proprioceptive feedback from actual movement. Key takeaway, use mental visualization as a supplement to, not a replacement for, physical practice.
Got it. Supplement, not substitute. Okay, let's bring in Barbara Oakley's ideas too. She had some really practical tools like the Pomodoro technique.
Yes, the Pomodoro technique is great for focus and beating procrastination. Use a timer, work in focused 25-minute bursts, then take a short break, repeat.
Simple, but effective.
The key is really committing to those 25 minutes. No distractions, just focus. Key takeaway, use the Pomodoro technique to structure focused learning sessions and combat procrastination.
I like that. Breaks things down. What else did Oakley emphasize?
She's a big proponent of embracing diffuse mode thinking.
Diffuse mode.
Yeah, when you're stuck on something in focus mode, really concentrating hard but getting nowhere, the best thing is often to shift your attention away completely. Go for a walk, take a shower, do something relaxing.
Let your mind wander.
Exactly. Yeah. Allow your brain to work on the problem in the background, making connections you wouldn't make while intensely focused. She mentions Dolly and Edison using similar techniques, kind of drifting towards sleep to access insight.
So alternate between focused work and letting your mind go diffuse.
Mm.
Don't just keep banging your head against the wall.
Precisely. If you're stuck, step away. It's often more productive. She also had an interesting point about perceived weaknesses sometimes being strengths.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Like maybe having a less efficient working memory. It might seem like a disadvantage, but she suggests it can actually foster more creativity and deeper understanding because you're less likely to jump to quick, easy answers.
Oh, a different kind of processing.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
She also warns against illusions of competence. You know, rereading notes and feeling like you know it, but you actually don't.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah, we all do it. The key is active recall. Testing yourself. Pulling the information out of your memory, not just passively reviewing it. That's how you know if you really understand. Key takeaway. Actively test yourself to ensure you truly understand the material.
Right. Self-quizzing is essential. Okay. Nearly there. Huberman briefly touched on supplements. Alpha-GPC and caffeine.
He did. Mentioned alpha-GPC mainly for potentially boosting power output before training, maybe some cognitive benefits at higher doses. Caffeine, as we said, can help alertness and performance for some, taken beforehand.
Right.
But, and this is the crucial part, he stresses, they are supplements. They support the foundations. Consistent practice, good sleep, proper nutrition, hydration, they absolutely do not replace those things.
No magic pills.
Definitely not. And responses vary hugely between individuals. You need to experiment carefully, listen to your body, and always prioritize sleep. There's no one-size-fits-all dose or timing. Key takeaway. Supplements may offer marginal benefits, but they are not a substitute for consistent practice, sleep, and proper nutrition.
Right. Focus on the fundamentals first. Mm-hmm. Okay, wow, that was a lot. Let's try and boil this down.
Right.
What are the absolute must-know key takeaways from this whole deep dive?
Okay, the big ones seem to be. Really prioritize that focused attention. Cut out distractions. Embrace errors. They're literally how you learn. Maximize your repetitions with deliberate practice. Don't be afraid to make mistakes while doing it. Use spaced repetition and breaks strategically for memory. Don't forget that short, quiet rest period right after practice. And remember, visualization is a helpful extra, but not the main event.
That's a great summary. So for you listening, what's an actionable next step you could take, like today?
Just choose one or two of these strategies that really click with you. Maybe it's the Pomodoro technique or spacing out your practice or that post-practice rest. Consciously try applying it next time you learn something. See what happens. Experiment.
Yeah, it really feels like understanding how we learn makes the whole process less intimidating, maybe even more.
All right.
It's an ongoing exploration.
Absolutely. Be curious. Play around with these science-backed tools. Learning is a journey, always.
So the final thought then. Now that you have a better handle on how your own brain learns best, what new skill are you going to dare to tackle? Or maybe how will applying these ideas change how you approach something you're already working on? Definitely something to think about. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.